Hello, everyone, and welcome to the HODLcast. Today we have very special guest, Josh Seglia, or Josh, how do I say your last name? I've probably just messed up saying
That's all right. She Gala.
it. Gala. Okay,
Yeah.
thank
Very
you.
European,
Yes, Josh. Josh and I—we've known each other for a couple years now through Tatiana, and met at a few conferences, and
know.
looking forward to having a conversation today about CBDCs. Josh, where are you based today?
Yeah. I'm calling out of Berlin.
Oh, very
Yeah.
nice. Okay.
Yeah. So very close to all the action on CBDCs, but it is happening everywhere all around the world, nightmarishly. So can't wait to get into it.
Yeah, I'm based here in Jacksonville, Florida, and I'm hoping this DeSantis will do his best to prevent anything like that from coming, but it seems to be a big power force that's like pushing this movement. But
Right.
first,
Right.
let's just get like a background of you. How did you get involved with Bitcoin, and what are your main focuses on? You can maybe tell us a little bit about your companies.
Yeah, sure. In 2003 or something like that, I launched the world's first swap site where women could swap clothes with each other. And this was all about like trying to get away from central banking and trying to figure out alternative economies. But I really quickly learned that swapping is just a terrible way of doing business because if someone really likes something that someone's got, but the other person doesn't like anything that they have, then the deal falls through. So it's good to have some sort of credit in the middle that you can use in an entire marketplace. Of course, it seems normal, right? But as as you're young and trying to make changes in the world, you come across these things. And so I was looking at the time, probably around about 2007, six. Something like that, and came across what the cypherpunks were trying to do by having a digital money. Because I didn't want to be a central bank in this swap. So I didn't want to start issuing credits because how many do I issue? So I was trying to look for something else, but I didn't know what I was looking for really. I just thought, there must be some sort of credit system that's, and of course, came across what the cypherpunks were doing and really seemed like an unsolvable problem, the double spend problem, where you have a, and most people know when I have a JPEG, I can't send you back the JPEG and, what? Do you still have a copy of it or what? So these rare digital assets, it just wasn't a thing that was possible, even with really complex cryptography. And so then I sort of stopped thinking about it for a while and it kept on going. But then in 2010, the Satoshi white paper came across my table and I just fell in love. I thought, wow, she's done it. This is it. This is the ultimate way of dealing with scarcity, digital scarcity, and fell down that rabbit hole and ended up implementing it into swap style where people could put this URL, the long Bitcoin string. And of course, no one knew what the hell that was. It was weird, my weird thing in there. And not many people used it, but it was the first step. And then I ended up later on losing a lot of money in the very first Bitcoin exchange that went broke, which was Mt. Gox. And from there, I wanted to build a transparency protocol for exchanges, so I built the Glassbooks protocol. And this was a way for anybody to audit an exchange in real time. Very easily, like grandma friendly. And Peter Todd and Gregory Maxwell had their version, which was something else, and it was too complex, it was too mathematical. So I really wanted to focus on ease of use. So we launched Voltoro, which was the world's first Bitcoin physical gold exchange in 2015, with the Glassbooks protocol. So anyone could always audit the exchange and make sure that the funds are there. So we don't have this fractional reserve system, because we all got into Bitcoin to get away from fractional reserve banking, yet all these exchanges, we had to trust them that they had the money. So that launched, and it's still going to this day. That's Voltoro.com. It's VaultoRO. So here's a little spelling there, cat, Voltoro. And you can buy trade Bitcoin and physical gold and back and forth. So it's that's really useful. But Really, in 2019, I flew over to La BitConf, the Latin American Bitcoin conference, one of the best conferences in the world. It's happening again very soon, actually. And I on the way there, I started reading the Terra Luna white paper, and was really quite horrified at the thought of fluff, like nothing, backing a currency to try to hold it stable. And I knew this not because I'm a genius, but just because I'd seen it in the past. Like I'd seen BitShares fail. That was an algorithmic stablecoin. There was a whole slew of them, and Waves, and there's a bunch of them. So really, when I went there, I gave that talk saying with Neville from Reserve that one of these pure algorithmic stablecoins will grow so big, and then it'll collapse, and it'll cause a real problem and a nightmare for the crypto industry. And that's what eventually did happen. But on the way back there, I started thinking about how to build a proper stablecoin protocol. And then here we are a few years later, and we're about to launch. And it's fully collateralized, fully backed, decentralized, so that people can lock up assets into smart vaults. And you can provably see how much is locked up, and there's no, and you still have control of your keys, so you don't need to give up keys like people did in Celsius. They lock up assets and they mint fresh S euro, or S dollar, S Indian rupee, or S. So there'll be a whole suite of stable coins, and you can borrow against it. And how we're launching is using a launch event called a bonding curve offering, and that's a really interesting way to basically get hold of the very first S euro for under a euro. And so it's a great way for yield farmers to really quickly earn a good yield, plus help us build the protocol, which will help fight against the CBDCs and such that are coming out very soon. So the whole point is to really make sure that we are battle ready as a community, and have real decentralized stable coins, not Tether, not USDC, not these coins that have basically got $1 in the bank for every ERC20 floating around. Rather, you want a decentralized mechanism that has more value locked up, just like the gold standard. That's why it's called the standard. It's the governments back then, they had gold locked up, which backed the fiat floating around. But this time, rather than a government holding that, you put Bitcoin, wrapped Bitcoin or Ethereum into smart contracts that you still hold the private key. You lock that contract up, and then you can mint up to that much value as stable cryptocurrency. And that's a debt then to yourself. So you're borrowing money from yourself at 0% interest as well, with no time limit, and no one asking you if you're allowed to do that. So no permission. And so this is really key, and why I'm interested in the CBDC debate. Because it's a very, very dangerous thing that's happening, and a lot of crypto people are championing it in like it's going to be like a big pump for crypto, but and we can go into why that's not the case.
Yeah, maybe just give a definition, like what are CBDCs and kind of what are the core problems you see with them?
Well, okay, so CBDCs are basically a problem that doesn't really need to be solved, but it's a problem that needs to be solved if you're a state looking to grab more power and are scared of its people. So it stands for central bank digital currency. And the whole point is that rather than, they looked at Bitcoin and thought, how can we make a version of that that's more controlled? Because programmable money is really useful, right? If it's decentralized, if nobody controls it, programmable money is amazing. We can say, hey, if this, then that, like if it's a blue sky and whatever, you can make any rule set up. If you've got oracles that will like define if that was true, you can trigger events. And this is how like we're getting amazing efficiencies, like decentralized marketplaces, where rather than getting the piddly 0.1%, 0.5% interest in your bank account, because guess what happens? The bank actually gives you your money to a third party. The third party gives it to another third party. That third party gives it to a brokerage. That brokerage gives it to a market maker who eventually puts it in the market, hopefully makes some money from it, and then pays everyone up the line until you get your little piddly bit of interest. Rather, the DeFi space go, hey, you know what? You just take your money and put it in a computer program called an automated market maker, and it pays you directly. And that's why you can get yields like, I don't know, 20%, 5, 10%, like crazy yields, because you're cutting out and making efficiencies so much better. And that all happens because of programmable money. You can program this stuff. But if it's a centralized programmable money, you're looking at a complete nightmare. And we can talk about some of these scenarios, and why they're nightmares if you want.
Sure. Yeah. Like what, it seems I've started to hear various advertisements, even on the television, of, banks that are offering virtual currency and saying, all the benefits of Bitcoin without the risk or the volatility. And, it's like these are really the exact opposite of Bitcoin. They're just created out of thin air. There's no supply cap and, private ledger based system. There's probably not any audit capability, like which, to your point earlier, but the draconian ways that it could be used, like to control people that we're already seeing in China with the if it gets linked to the social credit system,
Or
that's
when,
yeah, if or when.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on in the UK with them? I've seen a lot of talk of the new guy in there being very pro CBDC. Do you think it's likely he's going to put one out or?
So this gentleman called Rishi got in. He's the godson, I think it's godson of the owner of the largest social credit score system in the world being rolled now, called Infosys. And he's already giving speeches, talks about how CBDCs are great in the UK. So that's a definite linkage there. Now, I want to step back a bit and let people know why it's so different than what we've got at the moment. So what we've got at the moment, and people will say, oh, you've got already digital money. What's the difference? Well, the difference is right now you have a contract with your bank, your retail bank, and that contract states that everything's private according to that bank. There's a little bit of, the bank knows they could turn you off, they can do stuff. So there's a bit of control. So the best thing is cash. Cash is totally anonymous. You've got some cash, it's fungible, you can use it anywhere, no one's going to stop you. Of course, there are some codes on the cash, so it can be traced and tracked, and that's great because there's some criminals that might use it, and so you can the state can use that to try and fight crime. But that's the most anonymous version of fiat currency that we have. And the digital currency with the bank is like, if I go and buy something, the bank knows it. But how it happens currently is all of these banks, they don't, if I send you money through the bank account, or I buy something from your shop, you see that in your account, but actually the banks haven't swapped that or settled that yet. So what happens at the end of the day is that the central banks basically go through and make every bank even. So they go, okay, this bank, like, I don't know, there's like in the UK it's like 300 plus banks, and they will basically settle all the differences that they have. So a whole bunch of people sent money over here and here and here, and but they also sent money here. So what's the difference? Okay, let's just settle the difference and done. And this is all done by the central, but the central authority, the main governmental central authority, doesn't see all the details, didn't see that I actually bought something from your shop. All they know is there's a bunch of money from this bank that needs to be settled with that bank, and that's it. So there's at least a separation of control. And so when you take that away, what happens? Well, let's say you the central suddenly the central authority gets track of every single transaction on a micro level, what it is, who it is, where it is, why it is, even if you can connect enough data points. And then your money doesn't become your money anymore, because let's say there's another lockdown. Well, now they can say, oh, well, there's a lockdown, because that's now not a prison term anymore. That's now somehow a term that governments can use to say everybody is locked down. And everyone goes, oh, yeah, lockdown. And so your money now isn't able to be spent maybe 2, 3, 4 kilometers away from your house. So now it's not really your money, because this programmable money, you'll go and buy something and it won't work. So, and usually what will happen is people go, oh, well, then I'll go get cash out. Well, maybe you can't get cash out anymore. Maybe under such emergencies, they'll just stop any cash usage because it's spreading
They
germs.
kind of did stop cash in co during COVID times, at least in America. A lot of places refused, and in Canada, I know too. My mom was working at a wine shop, and they put in a rule that they couldn't accept cash because of the germs. So,
There you
yeah, and
go.
it's pretty reasonable that that won't that would happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if we look around though, there's all sorts of reasons that governments could do certain things, like climate change. All of a sudden, you have to buy carbon credits for everything you do. Or hey, you've already bought this much petrol or gas. This is too much, and then you have to justify why you're paying that, buying more gas, because you had to drive over to your sick grandma house more often this week and quickly ask for permission to spend your money. And what money is a store of your wealth, store of your time, store of or an ancestor's time if you've been inherited, but it's a store of value that work has been put in, and now you're giving it across to the central bank to say, no, I know that you toiled for that, well, that, but no, no, computer says no. And I mean, you can go to all sorts of nightmarish scenarios where, oh, we've got an obesity epidemic, so anything that's got too much sugar is now not. Oh, we noticed that you purchased this much sugar last month. We're going to have to give you a bad score, or your insurance now shares data because the insurance is now also federal because everyone's hurting themselves too much. So now, so you can start to really quickly, if you have this central database, rather than just, and it's one single change of having a central database to having all of these little banks that have contracts with you to not share your private data. Of course, the government could go in and say, hey, we want to subpoena the bank for your financial transactions. That's how it should work. Maybe they already have just access to it. Who knows? But generally speaking, there's at least a bunch of stuff to do, and the paper trail and courts and stuff to do that. But with a CBDC or a central authority like that, that's just gone out the window.
I was reading something earlier about the Biden's infrastructure bill from last year that it actually had a kill switch for cars in there. So, if the CBDC, like if that's not bad enough, they can just turn your car off as well. Like, the whole thing is just it's getting so insane to imagine living in this kind of world. Like, it's like worse than 1984, even predicted. If it's, well, maybe not worse, but we're really getting close to that kind of reality. And it's it, like you said, it's just one little switch. But what do you think, if everyone refuses to do it, it wouldn't work? Or like, how do you think something like this really could be rolled out? Like, won't the banks fight it because they stand to lose a lot of money if they're just disintermediated?
I think the thing with banks are they generally what they do is they are already selling financial fintech products, like they sell insurances and things like this. So all they'll do is sell some sort of app that will be your wallet for the CBDC. So you'll still have an account at the bank. I used to think people would get an account directly at the central bank, which effectively you do, but maybe they would give the guise of competition by, oh, you still can go to, XYZ bank, and oh, because they offer different insurances and different products as well as your handy dandy wallet. One of the good sayings to always remember is that the road to hell is paved with ease, with convenience, and so that's really important to remember. But some of the biggest thing that scares me is the amount of control. Look, whether you are for, like full on masking it up and get every booster under the sun or not, the fact is, over the last 3 years, we saw how governments can really ratchet control globally to an experimental medication that was supposedly had a lot of virtues behind them. And no matter what virtues these had, the extraordinary push for everybody to get this experimental medication was so extraordinary. And now imagine if you, and they were openly saying, oh, fine them $100 one week, $200 next week, $300, $500 in the next week, until they do. And soon enough, we'll have no. Imagine if the CBDC, they just say, oh, well, they don't have the special stamp, they didn't have, do the social credit thing or whatever, turn them off. So lock them out. And this is something that I've already seen starting to happen with the experiments that they're doing in China with their CBDC, is a shelf life on your money. So your money starts to have an expiry date. So imagine if there's a big financial crisis and they need to stimulate the economy. Then all they need to do is centrally say, right, everybody's money has a has an expiration date now. So you better spend it. You can't save it. If you save it, it'll expire, it'll run out of money, it'll run out of value. And these sorts of mechanisms are possible because, one, it's centralized, and two, it's programmable. And this is the fundamental difference behind something like Bitcoin or Ethereum versus these CBDCs.
Oh God, it's so scary to think about. And if it does get implemented, like if it's, how do you think, would it be the form of some kind of welfare payment? Like people opt in, sign up, they get this money, they have to spend it on a certain time. How would people build wealth for, their future? And do you think there would be any other system outside of this, or will it only be this CBDC that people have the option to use? Like what happens
Well,
to gold and Bitcoin?
yeah, like this is the lucky, beautiful, amazing timing of Satoshi Nakamoto, is that they jumped in front of this whole movement, managed to bring out digital scarcity, decentralized digital scarcity, meaning money, before the government went to this. And a lot of people think, oh, the government will have some blockchain or something, and it'll be great because it'll, I can then use it on DEXs. And no, not at all. This will be very, very centralized. It'll mainly be a settlement layer, and it'll be and the why they haven't done it till yet is because if you have this sort of central database, you become a massive, massive honeypot for an adversary, for a government that really wants to take you down. So you could imagine North Korea or someone that's against your culture. I'll just name North Korea here. I don't know, but they might have an interest in destroying the American economy by basically destroying the central database of everybody's money. And so. Generally, what happens is they become these private blockchains where it's really just, you know, two or three servers sitting next to each other, so there's low latency, all with a hashing block, taking turns to hash blocks. And so really it's not a blockchain. It is a they could effectively say it's a blockchain, but it's not in any way anywhere similar or resemblance of Bitcoin or Ethereum or anything like that.
Like, so there's no mining to secure the network or anything. It's just basically like a database or
It's a
private
database
ledger.
that, yeah, but it has to be super secure because everyone's going to go for each other's database. Because if you are in a war, you can just take down the data and just destroy the entire economy. So you want to because things are happening in real time, right? So people are constantly sending payments. So you can't just do snapshot backups because someone's just bought a mansion and oh, there was a hack. Don't worry, we reversed everything to the backup. And it's like now you suddenly haven't transferred all that money or whatever. And so,
I think that's the saving grace here, is that the governments really can't roll something like this out. They can talk about it, they can threaten it, or spread ideas about it, but when it comes down to actually moving from our system that's been, working since the 70s, whether it's, certainly got its problems, but it's what everyone's used to. You can't just switch over to this digital currency, and without getting hacked or all these security risks. And then if they all have different settlements, like if they're not using the exact same technology between different countries, is it going to be interoperable? There's so much to work out. And the governments, like we saw when Obama tried to do the Obamacare website wouldn't work. Like they're just not technical enough to launch something like this, or at least that's my, hope for humanity's future.
And I mean the thing is with so you saw the same thing with the COVID database in the UK. They paid millions of dollars for this app, and it turns out the back-end database was an Excel spreadsheet with and it crashed because it ran out of rows. Because that version of Excel only went up to, I don't know, so many millions of rows or whatever it was. So yeah, it is a saving grace that they're not technical enough. But I know that the CBDCs are very much highly backed by, I don't want to go down the full on like typical sort of conspiracy stuff, but it's just a fact that they're backed by like the World Economic Forum and stuff. And who's behind the World Economic Forum? Well, it's usually just a bunch of, YT and all of these consultancy firms, these huge consultancy firms. And that's all they do for private industries, set up secure services and messaging systems and stuff like that. And a financial system is effectively just a messaging system. It's just message passing in a secure way. And so, yeah, it is a concern. I do believe that they're close. And the sad part is it's Satoshi's technology. It's us in the cypherpunk world that have been living this world of freedom that have basically given them the ideas and the technology to go ahead and weaponize it against the people for the good of control. And if anyone's really looked closely at what's happening in China, really that's not it's not like, oh, that's happening in China, it would never happen here because we're free. Okay, well, think again, because there's been many a call for a national ID card or a national ID system. And again, this is it's a little bit different than a driver's license because of the technology that's in the background. And if you mix, and they were already with the whole push towards vaccine passports and these green passes globally, this was basically setting the stage, even if it wasn't setting this, even if they weren't like, even if they were like legitimately just building a vaccine because they were scared of everybody's health. Let's say that, let's give them the benefit of the doubt for the minute. it doesn't matter. What's happened is the vaccines didn't work as well as they thought. You know, you can still transmit it, you can still catch it. And but so the excuse for rolling out these passports wasn't there anymore. That doesn't mean it's just gone away. The technology is sitting there. And they've for years gone on about digital identity. They're already taught, you know, they're not calling it a social credit system, but you can imagine if you have a real sort of, excuse my French, but shit, it's the fan sort of scenario, you can imagine that governments start to say, okay, everybody needs to move over to this new settlement system because we're having such a hard time. We need to control how much money is being spent and what where because there's an oil shortage or whatever. So everyone's bank accounts suddenly get frozen. And by the way, we'll give you a bonus to just move your currency over and give permission to go over to the CBDC. And then once you're given the permission, then oh, cool. And most people go, oh, great, I get, you know, a bonus check. Fantastic, done. And oh, look how convenient it is. It's fantastic. Oh, by the way, now you know you we've noticed that you went into the shop and our infrared camera saw that you're a little bit hot. So you didn't check yourself beforehand. We're going to turn your QR code orange because we're not sure. So that means you can't spend any of your money outside of a, you know, 1 kilometer radius of your house. And you can't catch a train or a fly or anything. You know, I know that a lot of people listening to this might say, ah, you know, he's just a doomsdayer, pointing out all the worst case scenarios. But this is what you need to do to make sure that we don't just head towards the dystopia by thinking that everything that's passed to us from a central authority is some amazing tool that is wonderful for us and is in our best interest. At the end of the day, you have to have think always if you know it's the old trope of like if the item's free, then you're the product. And that's really the same with this. If it's free and convenient, well, who's standing to win? Why do they even want this? Is it literally so they can have faster payments? I mean,
One of the
definitely.
lines I've seen lately is financial inclusion. Like the whole, you know, rhetoric of early Bitcoin, like, oh, there's so many unbanked people. We need to create a digital currency that will, you know, help them. But, you know, the inclusion is just like inclusion to pay taxes or inclusion to be controlled.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a big one. And they'll also like, so the things that they'll Trump that they'll bring out is like financial inclusion for the virtues, and then for the bad things, like we've got to stop all the criminals and the they'll bring out the worst things so that if you aren't for that, then you must be one of those. And we already saw this with the internet debate from years ago. I remember in Australia, they wanted to put in an internet filter so they could track everything just publicly. They probably do anyway, but they said, oh, we can't because it'll slow everything down. That was the main thing. That was the only reason they didn't do it. And then the same and then like a year later, the same party that was really pushing for an internet filter was pushing for a new faster internet that was centrally controlled through like that was like they shifted. But the thing was that back then they said the same thing. We need to stop pedophiles and child abuse and stuff. Absolutely, you do. But what did they do with that? They said, if you're not for the internet filter, you must be a child abuser. And it's like, hang on, what? Where did this dichotomy come from? And that sort of straw man stuff will happen with CBDCs as well, is they'll pull out the worst of mankind and say, you are the worst of mankind if you don't go over to this new virtuous thing that we're offering. And so it's very, very important to see that for what it is, which is total malarkey and something to watch out for.
Just like with the vaccines, you know, if you didn't get it, you might kill your grandmother, or, you know, that whole rhetoric when it was,
Yeah.
Yeah, they just make it so that it's they take it to the complete extreme, and so many people go along with it. And then if you don't, if you're not with the majority, it feels like you're really on the outside.
Absolutely. And look, if you want to, if you're a movie buff, there's been plenty of movies made of that you could sort of, I could recommend. What was one of them was called, I mean, like In Time, for instance, was a movie about where time is money. And the poor had very little time to live, and when your clock ran out, and every time you did something, you paid with time. And this is also a kind of a CBDC, right? It's sort of this programmable money, which is totally dystopian. The poor people are suffering, and then it always ends with the poor revolting against the super wealthy. That's one, obviously. There was one called Early Warning from like 1981, which is also like spells it out. Like, it's so strange. It's like looking at right now, except it was made in 1981, and it's this sort of world government sort of type person that wants to put a chip in everyone, and there's a food shortages, and to get everyone into the system. So that's a really interesting one. Early Warning, it's called. And They Live is another classic, where these sunglasses that you put on start to show that there's half aliens in this world that actually control everything. So that's also a really interesting movie. So if people are movie buffs and want to sort of around the concepts of CBDCs that were foretold this stuff, because that's really what you have to look for, some of these creative minds that have come up with this stuff before.
Oh, I haven't seen any of those three, so I'll definitely have to check them out. Oh, goodness.
I mean,
Oh, go ahead.
No, you go for it.
I was just gonna say, what else can we do to avoid this? Like, other than, trying to educate people that it's coming, it just kind of seems like I feel like I've been trying to educate people about Bitcoin for a number of years, and the people that don't get it, they just don't. It was like Satoshi really knew when he said, "If you don't get it, I don't have time to explain it. Sorry." It's like the people. A lot of my family members, really, they're just so closed-minded to it. And when it was the same thing with all the lockdowns and the vaccines, closed-minded to the idea that they could be bad for you or any. So I think that same type person, which is definitely the majority, will willingly, go to these CBDCs. And then where does it leave the people that don't want to willingly go to it? Like, will Bitcoin? My fear, anyway, is that Bitcoin becomes really difficult to obtain or really difficult to use. Like, certainly if you have it, in self-custody, there's not really much that can be done to take it. But getting the on and off ramps, I think, can really clamp down against it or just be eliminated. Or it seems like the regulation is moving towards something where it's going to be harder to have Bitcoin off. On cold storage or to use it.
Bitcoin was designed to be working by itself without permission of the government. That was its design. Everything else that's built on top of Bitcoin, in terms of Coinbase and Kraken and everything in between, all of it are conveniences. If we do end up in a total Orwellian dystopia, there still is an exit door to Bitcoin. It just means that you will have to try harder. Just almost like right now, if you don't want to use credit cards, if you're like, I'm going to show them, I'm going to use cash, it's just harder. You have to go and get cash out and actually go into the service station to pay. So it's taking those few steps more. But the fact of the matter is that Bitcoin exists and it cannot be stopped. What we're building at the standard.io exists, will exist very soon. And these smart contracts are unstoppable. That's the point. So, and the really the point was to say, look, if you guys screw this up, if you guys screw up our money, there's an exit door, and I can take it. So just that threat of having that exit door is really, really strong. It's similar to like oil futures, right? No one's going to get oil delivered to them, but just the threat that you can actually get oil futures physically delivered means you peg the price to oil. Like, so threats are very, very powerful financial instruments. And so the threat of the exit door to say there's a whole nother economy out there, because America, Australia, the UK, the Emirates, these are all living in an anarchy of the world, and they're all trying to jostle. And in between the space of the jostle is cyberspace. And I'm going to continue using cyberspace, not metaverse, but is cyberspace. And in that space, we have we have DeFi. And there's another really amazing thing, and I touched on it before, how the efficiencies of DeFi attract money. And so a rational actor in the space will always bring liquidity into DeFi, because the returns are just more, they're faster. There's no way that the legacy system can offer the returns. So generally, more and more liquidity will head into DeFi. I mean, the standard is going to be offering 0% loans on your own money. So you can lock up your own money into a smart contract, hit lock, so you can't get to the initial, collateral, but then you can print or mint a new currency that's pegged to whatever currency you like, and you and up to, you up to a certain amount, so like 80% of the value. So you didn't have to sell your underlying collateral. Now you've got liquidity to go and buy a car. Bitcoin's still going up, or Ethereum, whatever you've locked up, but you haven't had it. Plus, there's no capital gains tax because you haven't sold anything. You've just borrowed some money. And if they keep inflating it away, the debt that you've taken out, the inflation actually pays off your loan, because you have no time limit. It's a 0% loan. There's no time limit, and so inflation is paying off your debt. So in 10 years' time, where you bought maybe a house, maybe then a carton of milk is the same as the house. So you've effectively bought a house with a carton of milk. And this is how the wealthy, by the way, have always secured their money, through hyperinflation. So these sorts of things that we're building at the standard.io are really only possible because of programmable decentralized money, and they are the counter. They are the yin to the yang of CBDCs. They're the opposite, and it's really important to see that. And when you look at like centralized stablecoins, they are very much just like a CBDC. We saw it just recently with the Tornado Cash, where USD Circle, USDC, basically said, "Oh, okay, we'll follow the Treasury's advice and just freeze all USDC that were tied to the." And they didn't care if there was people that used Tornado Cash. For the listeners, was a mixer, so you could get your Ethereum and you mix it in there with a whole bunch of other people's, and you get out, Ethereum that has benefit of the doubt. Has doubt to where it, came from. And so people say, "Oh, that's so nefarious." Well, okay, you can say that, but let's say you go down to the corner store to buy, I don't know, a bagel, and the shop owner has some sketchy friends, and you pay them with your Ethereum, and he goes, "Wow, you've got all these NFTs, you've got like, $100,000 sitting in this and that." Boys, go around the back and rob him, because it's a bearer-based asset. But you want to have privacy and money. You don't want everybody to see. Another example would be, hey, we don't, you have a shop, and you have a customer coming in, buys something, sees your wallet, goes back home, runs some software, finds out who you stock from, what your markup is, everything about your store, and can basically just go around you. And so privacy is really important when it comes to things like that, and also staff. You know, how much is each staff member is getting paid? Someone came in later, so you're paying them maybe more or less, or you know. And then there's infighting, and you know, there's all sorts of reasons why people need privacy. And so, for USDC to just go, no, turn it all off. Anybody that's ever used this mixing service, for all sorts of reasons, it could be. Sure, there's some nefarious ones in there as well. But you know, you should use good old-fashioned police work to hunt those people down, rather than just banning everybody from their privacy. And so, like this is just the start of the sort of CBD threat, right? That's kind of a CBDC because the government just said, "Hey, turn it off." They did, and they did.
It's like an arm of the government. But then Tether didn't turn it off. The difference of the two mentalities, or even maybe just the difference of where they're based, you know. Everyone
I
in
think that
America is so scared.
definitely plays a big role. And Tether's kind of interesting because it's not as controlled, it's not as regulated as USDC. And when I say regulated, meaning you know, fully in bed with the state, because they have to be, because if they're not, the state just stops it, stops the whole business. And imagine that you've got USDC go floating around speculating with all sorts of crypto stuff. Suddenly, the whole backing is frozen. And, you know, they'll just say, okay, shut all their bank accounts down, everything, because they're not following our instructions. Well, then the entire crypto market suffers because all of a sudden there's all sorts of liabilities floating around, locking up in DeFi products, and, you know, as we saw in DAI. In MakerDAI. So yeah, there's really it's really important. You know, we are at a precipice, at a juncture now where people need to put effort into supporting projects like ours to say that, and MakerDAO, and there's a whole bunch of them. You know, I just don't want to just talk about ours, but it's really important that we support good projects. Shapeshift is another one who's now fully DAO'd. You know, it's
But did you see the founder of MakerDAO died last week or this week?
Sorry, can you cut out there?
I saw some tweet that the founder of MakerDAO said something happened in Puerto Rico where he was going to be the target. His girlfriend was a spy and was going to plant a laptop on him, and then he drowned in the Atlantic Ocean a few days after that tweet. So, oh my gosh, the chilling effect of things like that make it like to be out there and working on these kind of projects is like a noble and a little bit scary kind of position to take these days.
Yeah, I mean, this is why Satoshi was anonymous, because you know, he, she, they knew that they were going up not only against governments but banks, big oil, because it's the petrodollar. It was a huge, massive upset, which not many people realized because they thought it was some funny, weird little internet money thing, and it like the Trojan horse. Came in and just sort of got accepted, and it was amazing how it did. I mean, it's taken a long time. You know, we're now in the what 14th year, and so it's really taken a long time. But it's amazing that it came around at the right time, like I said before, because if we didn't have this exit door, then we would really, really be struggling to say, hey, you know, don't screw this up.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I guess final question. I appreciate everything you've said. It's been really wonderful talking to you, Josh. Where
Thank
do you
you.
see us in 10 years? Where do you see all this landing, or what the landscape looking like?
Oh wow, 10 years, that's such a far window. I think that really major change happens through generational change. And I know this sounds weird, it's a little bit of an offshoot, but really it doesn't change without changing how we rear our children. It doesn't change unless we make it so that we peacefully parent our children. We don't hit them. We don't abuse them. We don't teach them through authority. We don't say, when they say why, you don't say, because I said so. Because all that does is teach them to bow down to authority. And that's the major problem, is that authority is this perpetual bowing down to authority rather than thinking critical for yourself and saying that, well, give me good reason so I can find logical evidence for why this is a good thing. And that's how you create real change. So 10 years is a good step forward, but I think that will only really happen in like 20, 30, 40 years, as multiple generations learn that it's not acceptable to hit children. And just like it's not acceptable to hit old people because they've pissed their pants, you know, or hit someone in a wheelchair because they couldn't, you know, roll fast enough or something. Like, you know, it's just normal. You don't, you know, everyone knows you don't hit someone in a wheelchair, yet they're far more capable of defending themselves than a child.
Maybe, yeah.
You know, so it's a bit of an offshoot, but really it's about thinking in the distance when you think about far from the distance, how you make true change.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of pure financially, I think we're heading towards a global calamity, and it's pretty obvious to most people, especially on, I don't like using left right the paradigm, because it's such a divisive, nonsensical beast, because they're both wings of the same beast, but people that care more about, you know, because I see that the binary really is freedom versus tyranny, not left and right. It's freedom versus tyranny. And so if we in the next 10 years can mainly, when we make decisions on policy or regulation, is to think about the is this heading towards freedom, or is it heading towards tyranny? And even if it's on our side, because I've seen lots of people that, for the Biden administration, and they're really in the left and they love it and everything's, you know, hunky dory, and they will just say, oh, well, there's no point looking at at voter fraud, let's say, because no, Trump lost, don't look at it. Look, that I'm happy for you that your team won, right? Whatever. But you have to, if one side is saying something, that could just as easily have been your side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sacrament. It's at the highest of importance to make sure that we constantly think, did something happen? Is it heading towards freedom or tyranny? And whether it's for your side or the other side, it doesn't matter, because the sides will change. And this is actually why democracies are so kind of dangerous, because the power structures always knew this. It's like if you have a monolith, if you have a dictatorship or a king or a monarch, you know, it's very easy to have one single thing and the populace just get angry and push it over. But if you have a left and a right, it's this amazingly strong structure where the people push on this side and it's like, oh, and then they get angry and they go over on the other side and they push against that side, but the structure just stays strong. And so that's why it's really important to really think about freedom versus tyranny. And these CBDCs are a big, big step, an Armstrong step.
Yeah.
to tyranny. And it's paved in all its glory and it's all its ease and its little extra free check. And all of this stuff will be enticing everybody towards it. Mm-hmm. Just be careful.
All of a sudden, it's like, you know, there's no way to own anything because you don't even own your own money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, everything's heading towards, I mean, you know, again, to sort of bring up the conspiracy of the WEF, There's a bit of a tagline, you want to own nothing, but you'll be happy. But in a way, they're right. Like traditionally, you want to try to like have everything in different companies and not actually personally own stuff and then be happy. But not in the way that they want it. They definitely want that. There's a definite elite and a CBDC that owns everything and rents everything to you. And we've seen it with software, right? We've seen it with software where software you used to buy a license, and then it's your software. You've got that software. Now, pretty much everything is a subscription. You have to pay monthly for everything, and it's extraordinary. So we're definitely heading towards that in the next years. And another good movie to look at, if you want to look at some of the warnings of the past, is a film called The Life of Others. And it's about the Stasi in East Germany, and how they functioned and how they worked. And this was all about neighbors spying on each other. And oh, they're being sus. They're talking to the West. Oh, they're listening. I heard the Western TV playing. So then, they get a fine, or they like, and this sort of the suspicion that starts. And the lives of others are a really great warning for the future, because the CBDCs are also like, hey, we'll pay you some extra in your wallet if you report someone that maybe went past their lockdown, like went for a walk a little bit outside, or had something bad to say about the current president or whatever it is. You can start to fully control the lives, because you are controlling their labor, the store of value of their labor. And that's very, very dangerous.
Agreed. Yeah. Well, let's hope we just, wake up and never get there. And I don't know how that's gonna happen. It seems like it's just an inevitability right now, but yeah, I hope the plan B will really work, and things like your company, The Standard, will save people from that kind of tyranny.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just us, thank you. It's the whole crypto industry, that not the whole crypto industry. There's definitely bad actors and scams and all sorts, but there's also some very good actors, excuse me. There's also some very good actors in the space who are really building an amazing decentralized infrastructure, financial infrastructure, insurance infrastructure, also regenerative and giving charity infrastructure in the DeFi space. So yeah, there's extraordinarily positive things happening, and it's really important to keep an eye on that, because that'll lift you up rather than push you down. I'm sure if you're listening to this right now, you might feel like, oh, geez, it's all over. What the hell? What's the point? But there is amazing stuff happening. There really, really is amazing stuff happening all around the world, all around the world. And so, yeah, chin up, and let's keep building.
Agreed. Yeah, that's a nice note to stop on. Yeah, when humans, get pushed in a corner, we're very ingenuous people, I think, as proven time and time again, and we'll find a way.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said.
Thanks, Josh. Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can go to thestandard.io, and you can follow all the links there. You can join the waiting list right now, but also it's a DAO, so you can come to the Discord and say you've got some skill sets that you want to share. You can come and help out, and we've got all sorts of things happening, and people getting paid to do certain stuff, like building things or making graphics or doing podcasts or whatever it is. So there's lots of stuff happening, and just come and check us out. I'm on Twitter. It's J Scigala, which is my last name, JSCIGALA, on Twitter, and you can follow me there, and keep keeping me in check, and listening to my crazy rants.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time today and all the great information you shared.
It's an absolute pleasure, Sasha. Thank you for having me.